The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Sam Mann, and this is Beyond Conventional Medical Thinking. And the topic today is diuretics and how to optimize their use. Diuretics, a lot of people call them water pills. They're very widely prescribed. They increase the excretion of sodium and water in the through the kidneys. And they're very important in the treatment of a number of very common conditions. Hypertension, the most common medical diagnosis, congestive heart failure, kidney diseases, and sometimes in patients with swelling in their legs. I'm going to focus mainly on hypertension because it's the most common medical condition and diuretics are a crucial component of treatment in many patients. And also, of course, it's my specialty. So tens of millions of Americans are taking diuretics for their hypertension. So it is relevant to many people. Please get the word out to your friends and relatives about this podcast. It'll be relevant to many of them. There are standard ways to prescribe diuretics, but I want to talk about better ways that became evident to me over decades of clinical experience treating patients. I'm going to be discussing approaches that most physicians are not aware of and that can help achieve better outcomes and also reduce adverse effects of diuretics. And something that I always focus on, the need to individualize treatment, to find the diuretic, the dose or combination of diuretics that's the best match for the patient in my office. One size does not fit all. There are many blood pressure medications that your doctor can choose from to treat your hypertension. So how can your doctor tell if your blood pressure is likely to respond to a diuretic? There are clues, but few doctors either are aware of or pay attention to them. And even in the 2025 hypertension treatment guidelines, they don't discuss the clues that are there in published studies and confirmed for me in decades of clinical experience. So for example, Black patients have an increased likelihood of having sodium-mediated hypertension and are more likely to respond to a diuretic than to other drug classes. Also, they respond to calcium channel blockers. Another terrific clue is a blood test that measures plasma renin activity, but few doctors ever order the test. A diuretic is much more likely to be effective and lower your blood pressure if you have a low renin level on the test, and less likely to respond to a diuretic if your renin is not low. As a hypertension specialist, I regularly use this test to help guide me in these decisions. So if it's helpful, then why don't doctors use it? I'm not sure. The studies are there. I also know that when the pharmaceutical industry comes up with a new drug, they're not interested in finding out in whom it will work and in whom it will not work. They want everybody on their medication. So they're not interested in tests that can distinguish this. Now, when we prescribe a diuretic, we want to use the lowest dose we can get away with. But many patients clearly need a higher dose or a combination of two diuretics to get the blood pressure under control. Unfortunately, a lot of doctors don't prescribe a diuretic regimen that's strong enough to get the job done, and I'm going to explain why and what we can do. Clearly, we need to individualize the dose. The standard dose is not right for all, and that's what practicing medicine is all about. So I'm going to explain how to select the right diuretic and the right dose, and I'm going to offer logical and very helpful strategies that most doctors are not aware of, and that are not discussed in the medical literature very much. And these are strategies that you can suggest to your doctor and also convey to your friends and family, because their doctors are also very likely to be unaware of them. So you need a diuretic that's regimen that's strong enough to do the job, but not stronger than you need. Today, doctors generally prescribe a lower dose than doctors did decades ago. It works in some patients, but many doctors feel uneasy about prescribing a higher dose, even when it's needed. So let's talk about that. I'm going to discuss the three most widely used classes of diuretic and how best to use them. The thiazide diuretics, the potassium-sparing diuretics, and the loop diuretics. And I'll describe each of them, and they each have advantages and disadvantages. First, the thiazide diuretics. These are the most commonly prescribed diuretics in treating hypertension. The two most commonly prescribed ones are hydrochlorothiazide and chlorthalidone. Most doctors prescribe hydrochlorothiazide at 25 milligrams. Chlorthalidone is actually a bit more potent, and a 25 milligram dose of chlorthalidone is equivalent to 37.5 or 50 milligrams of hydrochlorothiazide. Hydrochlorothiazide is much more commonly prescribed in this country, so I'm going to focus, in terms of thiazide diuretics, on the hydrochlorothiazide. It's usually prescribed at a 25 milligram dose. Now, as I said, decades ago, it was usually prescribed or often prescribed at 50 milligrams. Doctors don't do that anymore and generally prescribe the 25 milligram dose, which is safer. It has fewer side effects, such as abnormal lowering of the potassium level, sodium level, and those are dose-related side effects. Now, if you look at studies, most blood pressure drugs of various kinds of drugs lower systolic pressure by about 11 to 12 millimeters. Hydrochlorothiazide 50 milligrams also did that. But the 25 milligram dose that's commonly used only lowers it by about 7.5 millimeters. It's weaker than the other drugs. And again, it illustrates that, yes, very often we need to augment the diuretic regimen. 25 hydrochlorothiazide is enough for some, but for many others, it isn't. And again, no one's comfortable about prescribing the 50 milligram dose because of the side effects. So what we can do, if we don't want to increase the dose, we can add a second type of diuretic, the potassium-sparing diuretics. And we can add a potassium-sparing diuretic to the hydrochlorothiazide, and it protects the potassium, and it's safer than increasing the dose to 50. Now, the most widely prescribed potassium-sparing diuretic is spironolactone. It blocks the effect of a hormone called aldosterone, and that's how it helps increase sodium excretion and hold on to potassium rather than excrete more. Treatment guidelines recommend spironolactone as a potassium-sparing diuretic. I'm not crazy about spironolactone. I try not to prescribe it. It has some side effects. It can cause breast tenderness, and it can cause erectile dysfunction. And there are alternatives that don't do that. But spironolactone has been the most widely prescribed one. But that's why I'm not crazy about it. One alternative is eplerenone, which also antagonizes aldosterone. It's less likely to have side effects, but that's because it's weaker than the spironolactone. So you have fewer side effects, but less lowering of blood pressure. Now, there's another potassium-sparing diuretic that has nothing to do with aldosterone, and it's called amiloride. That's the one I like. It's very well tolerated. It's been around for decades. It's safe. It's a shame that it's not widely prescribed, and most doctors either don't prescribe it at all and are not familiar with prescribing it. So why not, if it's such a good drug? Here's what I think happened. when the Amiloride was marketed originally, and this was decades ago, at that time, the dose of hydrochlorothiazide was typically 50 milligrams. So they designed a drug that a pill that in one pill combines 50 of hydrochlorothiazide with the Amiloride, 5 milligrams. But by the time they marketed it, most doctors had stopped prescribing 50 and were prescribing 25 and were reluctant to prescribe 50. So the pill never took off because the 50 milligrams of hydrochlorothiazide in it was too much. And the company that marketed it never marketed it with the 25 milligrams of hydrochlorothiazide. So it never caught on. But if you're prescribing 25 of hydrochlorothiazide and you want to add a potassium sparing diuretic, then you can add it as a second pill. There's no problem. Is it as good as spironolactone? Studies tell us that 10 milligrams of Amiloride is as effective as the typical 25 milligrams of spironolactone. When I prescribe it, I usually prescribe it as a 5 milligram pill that I add to the hydrochlorothiazide 25. And if necessary, I increase it to 2 pills or 10 milligrams. But many respond to the 5. It's a beautiful combination. It works. It's very well tolerated, but used much too little. And this is something you would have to suggest to your physician, most of whom have never prescribed it. Wonderful drug to add to hydrochlorothiazide. There are new potassium sparing diuretics that will be coming onto the market in the next year or two. They also they block the synthesis of aldosterone, so they're not they don't have hormonal effects. They'll be well tolerated, and they block the synthesis of aldosterone, and that's how they work. They're going to be good drugs, and they're going to be effective, but not more effective than these. And they will be very expensive as new drugs, and you're going to have trouble either with the cost or getting approvals for it. And that's why I think Amiloride is a wonderful alternative that's much less expensive, well tolerated. Tell your doctor about it. So the third category of diuretics are the loop diuretics. The loop diuretics differ from the thiazides. They cause a much more potent diuresis, meaning they increase your urine flow much more powerfully, but the effect is briefer. So whereas the thiazides work gradually over 12, 18, 24 hours, the loop diuretics work within 3 to 6 hours, depending on which one. They're much more powerful, but they're briefer. Now, there are three main loop diuretics that are used in medicine. Furosemide, otherwise known as Lasix, which is the most famous and the most widely prescribed. And then the other two are torsemide and bumetanide. Again, most doctors prescribe the furosemide, the Lasix. There's also ethocrinic acid for people who are allergic to the loop diuretics. Ethocrinic acid is an alternative for a rapid-acting diuretic. Now, of the three, my preference is torsemide, not furosemide or Lasix. Why? Two reasons. First of all, the Lasix is not completely absorbed in everybody into the GI tract. So when you take it, you get into the bloodstream anywhere from 10 to 90% of the dose you took. So for some people, a low dose does nothing and they need a higher dose. Other people, you have to start at a lower dose if they absorb all of it. And you don't know who is the one who absorbs 90% and who absorbs 10%, and you have to play with the dose. With all drugs, you have to play with the dose, but even more so. The torsemide is completely absorbed, much more predictable. Generally, a dose of 5 or 10 milligrams, although one can go higher if needed. The second advantage of torsemide is that the effect lasts a little bit longer, like about 5 hours as opposed to 3 hours. And the interesting thing is, if you look at the hypertension treatment guidelines in terms of using the loop diuretics, for the Lasix and the bumetanide, they recommend taking it twice a day. Torsemide, they recommend only once a day. It's right there in the table in the guidelines. Nobody's aware of that, but torsemide is a more solid once a day drug. And I would not prescribe a loop diuretic twice a day to my worst enemy. Okay. So, in whom would we use a loop diuretic rather than the thiazide? Patients with congestive heart failure, patients with kidney disease, certain patients with hypertension, and patients who have had problems with thiazide, such as a low sodium blood level, a loop diuretic is safer. Now, here are some other tips about prescribing the loop diuretics. And again, a lot of doctors may not be aware of this. Bring it to the attention of your doctor. Hopefully, he'll respond positively. One is loop diuretics can be inconvenient because after you take it, you got to pee a lot for a few hours and you got to be near a bathroom. So, a practical solution is you can pick the time of day that's most convenient for you to take it every day. So, you could take it in the evening if you'd rather not take it in the morning. You can take it in the morning if peeing in the morning is not too inconvenient. Pick the time, and maybe in the evening it's more convenient because you're going to be home after it. The other thing is two things. One, there's no evidence that taking it in the morning versus the evening, that one is more advantageous than the other in terms of controlling the hypertension. So don't worry about that. The other thing is you may be taking it every morning, but let's say it's inconvenient for you some morning, what do you do? And for example, I had a patient who was late for his appointment. And when I spoke with him, he said he was late because he took his dose of torsemide in the morning. And then he got in his car to drive here. And in the middle of the RFK bridge, he had to stop, get out of his car, and pee over the side of the bridge because he couldn't hold it in any longer. And patients like that moved me to say, hey, very simple. You take it every morning. If you're going to be getting out in your car and going somewhere, take it later in the day. I mean, you want to be careful to leave a reminder to take it because you don't want to forget it. But if it's inconvenient on a given day, you can take it at a different time. If you usually take it in the evening and you're going to the opera, take it in the morning. So you don't have to be rigid about that. Now, another strategy that very few physicians ever recommend to their patients that makes total sense. Varying the dose. So, we as physicians, we prescribe the same dose every day. Reasonable. But if we're talking about diuretics and sodium excretion and salt intake, our salt intake varies. So, if you eat out in a restaurant, the amount of salt you take in that day compared to home cooking is double or triple the amount that you get when you eat at home. And this can affect your blood pressure because you retain more sodium and can raise your blood pressure. And studies show that increasing the sodium intake for 2, 3 days, your pressure will be higher. Now, that doesn't mean you need, and I'm suggesting when you have a high salt intake, there is the option of taking a higher dose. And by that, I mean, for example, a pill and a half instead of one. So, I mean, if you have one meal out in a restaurant, I wouldn't worry about it. But if you're eating out or if you're traveling and eating out every night, that's where you should think about varying the dose and asking your doctor about that strategy. So you ate out. Well, the next morning, I call it a morning after pill, take a pill and a half instead of one. It's still legal. And if you're eating out every night for a week, then maybe take it every other day for that week. Because I remember patients would tell me that when they'd come home from a trip, when they were eating out every night, by the time they got off the plane coming home, their legs were all swollen. And this is a simple thing to do. Physiologically, it makes sense. It is reasonable. Discuss it with your doctor. Make sure there's no reason not to do it. But I think that that occasional varying of the dose is better than taking rigidly the same dose every day, regardless of how much salt you're eating. I've recommended this to hundreds of patients. I've never encountered a problem from it. Now, are there studies that confirm the value and safety of this? Nobody has ever done a study because diuretics are all generic now, and nobody was interested in doing a study, but it makes sense, and I would strongly consider it and discuss it with your doctor. Another strategy is if you're taking a diuretic for heart failure. If the dose is enough, you're in good shape. But what if the dose isn't quite enough? What would happen? If you were taking a dose that's not sufficient, you would retain fluid and eventually be at increased risk of symptoms of heart failure. So, how could you be aware that you are retaining fluid and that maybe you should take a higher dose? Well, one is your weight. Have a bathroom scale. It's one thing if you overeat for weeks and you gain a couple of pounds over a few weeks. We're not talking about that. But if your weight increases 3, 4 pounds over 2 or 3 days, and if the scale is reasonably reliable, then it would suggest, well, maybe take a pill and a half to get the weight back down to close to where it was at the beginning of those few days, rather than wait until you gain more and more weight and then have an increased risk of developing symptomatic heart failure. Another strategy would be to examine your legs for swelling. And if you have no swelling or a little bit of swelling, and that's your norm, and then you notice, gee, I have considerably more swelling in my legs, you might want to take a pill and a half instead of one. Again, this is perfectly logical. Yes, discuss it with your doctor and get his opinion on it, but I think it avoids the risk of taking the same dose every day as you retain more and more fluid until finally you've retained a lot of fluid and you're on the verge of trouble. Okay. And conversely, let's say you're not having much salt. Let's say you have a viral infection, you're eating very little. Should you take the dose or should you take less of a dose? If you're eating next to nothing and keep taking the dose, you could get dehydrated and your pressure could drop too low. So the logical thing is if you're eating very little, maybe cut the pill in half, or if you're eating nothing, even skip it. And I often advise patients, if you're not eating, skip the diuretic. It's safer than, possibly safer than taking it. And again, studies don't have not been done to show the validity of it, but the physiologic rationale is so obvious and makes such sense. Discuss it with your doctor about varying the dose. One final strategy. I've never met a doctor who uses it, but wow, does it make sense? Any number of patients have a problem called nocturia, meaning they get up multiple times a night, 3, 4 times a night to pee. It interrupts their sleep. It's a real nuisance. They're tired. And we don't really have good solutions for it. Yes, if there's prostatic problems, a urologist would deal with the prostate issue, but let's say it's not that. The first thing I would tell patients is I would ask them, well, how much water do you drink? And a lot of those patients will tell me, they try to drink 8 glasses a day. I mean, I would ask them, do you drink a lot of water? And they say, I try to. And for some people, they need that extra fluid. People who have had kidney stones, people who have had recurrent urinary infections, yes. People who have not had that problem don't need 8 glasses of water. And it puts you at risk of two things. One is having to get up at night 3, 4 times a night. And two, a risk of a low blood sodium concentration, which can be dangerous. So if you don't have those conditions, the recurrent infections and the kidney stones, discuss it with your doctor. And I think he will tell you the same thing. No, you don't need 8 glasses. And that can help solve the problem. But let's say you're not drinking 8 glasses and you're getting up 3, 4 times a night. Then what? If you need a diuretic, here's the strategy. If you're on a thiazide, switch to a loop diuretic. Or if you're on a loop diuretic, you can continue the loop diuretic. But the logic here is, when should you take it? Take it around late afternoon, around 4 or 5 o'clock. And what will happen is you will pee more in the evening, after dinner, you will pee more. And then when you go to bed, you will pee less because you've gotten out the extra fluid, and it'll knock it down maybe once or twice, or maybe even not at all overnight. So if you have that problem of getting up a few times a night to urinate and you need a diuretic, I would absolutely switch to the loop diuretic, take it in the late afternoon, and you'll get up less overnight. And that makes a nice difference. And you can suggest it to your doctor. I mean, I'm not suggesting you take a diuretic, a loop diuretic, if you don't need a diuretic. And again, watch out about the excessive water fluid intake. If you don't need the extra fluid, cutting down on that will also help reduce the number of times you get up at night to pee. So we'll stop here. I hope you've found these strategies helpful and worthwhile, and discuss them with your doctor, because he will not be suggesting them to you. You'll need to suggest it to them and get their feedback. But I think these are logical and safe strategies, and I suggest you suggest it to them. They make sense and they're safe. And again, please spread the word about this podcast, because there are so many people who are taking diuretic and this can be helpful to them. And also ask them to subscribe to the podcasts. Thank you. Until next time.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.